Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.
Welcome to Becoming is Messy, where we dive deep into the journey of survival, transformation, and everything in between. I'm your host, Megan Dawson, here to share the honest, unfiltered stories behind my own process of becoming. Life isn't a pretty and perfect straight line, and neither is becoming the person we're meant to be. Here, we embrace the ups, the downs, and all the beautiful, chaotic, messy moments that shape who we are. Whether you're in the thick of change or reflecting on past transformations, this space is for real conversations about what it means to grow, stumble, and rise again. So get comfy, settle in, and let's get messy. Hello, fellow and future messies. Welcome back to Becoming is Messy, where we speak truth even when it's messy. Today's episode is a powerful one. Before I welcome our guest, I would just like to say that this episode contains discussions of adult topics, including sexual assault, childhood abuse, and trauma. Listener discretion is advised. Please take care while you're listening and pause if you need to. If these topics are sensitive or activating for you, know that you are not alone and your well-being matters. I am honored, truly honored, to be joined by someone whose courage, resilience, and heart-centered mission continue to inspire me, Jules Bindi. You might recognize Jules as one of the brave voices to publicly speak out about her assault by Harvey Weinstein, a decision that not only took unthinkable strength, but helped change the cultural conversation around power, accountability, and justice. She later testified in his Los Angeles trial, contributing to the conviction that would put him behind bars. But Jules' story isn't just about survival. It's about what you do with your story once you've survived. And let me tell you, what she's done is nothing short of extraordinary. Jules is a single mom, entrepreneur, and emotional intelligence coach. She's the founder of EQ Kid Books and the author of My Body, My Rules, a children's book designed to teach body safety, emotional boundaries, and self-trust. She's also built two multi-million dollar brands, Zugo Pet, which was featured on Shark Tank, and became one of only three pet manufacturers in the world to pass Center for Pet Safety crash tests with perfect scores, and Zugo Bike, a seven-figure e-bike company she co-founded in under a year. Her work has been featured on ABC, Fox, NBC, Business Insider, and more. She's been nominated for the Women Making a Difference Award by the Los Angeles Business Journal. But beyond all of that, she's a woman who's lived through abuse, betrayal, financial devastation, and public vulnerability, and somehow has managed to turn all of that into fuel for helping children build emotional intelligence, empathy, and strength. Jules doesn't just preach emotional intelligence, she embodies it. When her marriage ended suddenly in 2023, along with the devastating discovery that much of their money was gone, she chose not to crumble. Instead, she looked at her daughter, picked herself up, and asked the question that defines so many of our becoming stories. What now? What came next was the creation of EQ Kid Books, a series built from Jules' own healing journey, designed to give families and children the language we wish that they had growing up. She says, life is not meant to be a constant battle with sickness, sadness, and depression. To truly live, we must seek out health, happiness as our primary focus. A life of joy and vitality is within your reach. And I believe her, because she's lived it. Jules, welcome to Becoming is Messy. It's an honor to have you here.
Thank you. I mean, that brought tears to my eyes.
I'm tears. I was reading. I was like, I get choked up. I'm so proud of you.
You wrote that? That's amazing. Like, who is this crazy person?
My gosh, it's incredible. Well, I am honored to have you here. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thanks for having me. Yeah, it's been quite a season for me, I can tell you that much.
Yeah. Speaking of that, help us set the stage for today's conversation and just give us a little bit of an insight of this current season of your life.
Oh, wow. This season of my life, it feels like I'm just reclaiming everything.
Yeah.
Reclaiming my voice, my power, my vision. After walking through, like you said, like betrayal and bankruptcy and heartbreak and deep personal loss, I've come out on this other side more, I believe, more rooted in who I am than ever before. I'm not rebuilding just to survive. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference. Because a lot of people, when these things happen for them, they build to survive. I'm rebuilding to thrive, to create and to serve. So it's more purpose-driven than ever before. Mm. This season of alignment, like this, like it's just, yeah, like a season of alignment.
Yeah.
Like I'm raising my daughter with emotional intelligence and like at the center of our home. Everything about us is she course corrects me all the time.
Yes, which isn't is that amazing? Yes, yeah. Yes. Passing it on to the next generation is incredible.
Yeah. So like I'm creating new stories through EQ Kid Books that helps children and parents navigate big emotions with loving curiosity, and I'm leading a business with integrity. Like it just, that's the big part. And I'm speaking out, not just about the darkness I'm overcoming, but about the light I found in the process. If I had to sum it up in one word, I would say just empowerment, but not the kind that's loud or flashy. That's quiet, grounded strength that comes from choosing healing, choosing truth, and choosing to lead from the heart.
Wow. So I'm curious, every becoming story has some type of messy path. And I covered some of your twists and turns just in a summary. Walk us through some of those twists and turns in your own words. And just really the question that I wanted to get at was, what is the thread, do you think, within you that carried you through? Why do you think it is that you had the ability to focus on healing and a growth mindset, it seems, in some of the hardest moments that any of us could imagine?
Whew. Wow. I feel like I was prepared and built for this since I was a child. Mm-hmm. I can say that growing up, I was born in the fight or flight. Mm-hmm. When I was 4 years old, I witnessed my sister getting molested in front of me by my next door neighbor. And it was our neighbor. It was our best friend's brother. So we played with him for the next like 14 years of our life and just pretending like nothing happened, even though we reported it, even though we stepped up. So the process was already fight or flight, having to forgive, having to move through things. And it was like the elephant in the room. And everything I've moved through, it's been the path of forgiveness. I just keep pouring into myself. Like I pour into my businesses. Things just happened so suddenly without warning that I didn't know what, like I was in a state of shock, right? Without warning, my bankruptcy and I was served divorce papers. I lost my marriage and then I lost my company. And then I felt I lost my livelihood and I lost my team. And then the company I helped build overnight to like, we ended up generating over $20 million in sales with under 3 years. It was gone overnight. It felt like to me, it was gone overnight.
Yeah.
This is my story.
Of course.
In the bankruptcy court, I was owed over $500,000 of my own personal money in debt. And that same time when everything was happening, I became a single mom. So my messy path is, it was like you walk into your children's room and it's like you just cleaned it and now everything is thrown all over the place again.
Ooh, yes. Like,
what just happened? And it was like a second, it was like a death. It was like a death. I became a single mom, completely financially cut off, like from all my businesses, no child support, no income. It was just me and my daughter starting from scratch. And I can't really say from scratch because I bought this house, but I'm like, how am I going to pay my mortgage?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Again, I was like, what am I going to do? I was literally thinking of ideas of what can I make money right now? I mean, I'm literally, what do I have to do? But this wasn't my first storm,
right?
I already survived family trauma. I had an abusive father, a sister that she tried to take my life at one point.
Wow.
When I was younger, because she was on drugs and we did not get along at all. And obviously the sexual abuse that she was going through. And yet I chose healing. I chose forgiveness. And I even reconciled with them. My sister's my best friend. My dad passed away in 2019, but he was living with me for a while. He ended up being the best grandpa he could have been for my daughter for her first 3 months of her life. When everything's crumbling, I didn't stay down. Yeah. I fought to buy my company back. I bought Zugo Bike back in bankruptcy with my own grit of raising the money. I faced off against hidden bidders who I can't mention their names because it's not confirmed.
Understood.
And at the same time, I poured into the EQ Kid books, turning everything that I've learned into emotional intelligence and boundaries, resilience, and beautiful stories for children.
Wow.
So the story I have, it's about devastation to reinvention.
I relate to so much of what you've just shared from your background. I've shared a lot with my listeners that when I was born, I caught an infection at birth that led to lifelong body problems. My father was an alcoholic. He abused my mom in front of me. So that early childhood trauma, and then just throughout my life, I've just had those pivotal moments. And when I look at my life, people have asked me, where do I find that resilience? And it's not that I wish that on anybody. I don't wish trauma, especially going forward when we think of our kids and the kids of the world. However, I do see how resilience is established in us. So as we become adults and the other shoe drops, we are in some ways prepared to deal with that and have tools that we've established, where I see other people in my life who have such healthy backgrounds and such ideal childhoods and very little severe trauma. And some of those adult things really shake them to the core and knock them flat down, and they don't know how to rise up from that. And so I so wonder, as a mom, here I am, I have three teenagers, and I too want to pass on emotional intelligence to them and have raised them to be able to name their feelings and just be so much more advanced in how they navigate life. But one of my worries has been, if I shield them so much and they haven't had experience with trauma, how do they build that resilience through our advice and through how we're teaching them? So with that said, I kind of wanted to just start with the origin of EQ Kid Books. And what was the moment when you realized that this was something as a mom that you needed, but also something the world needed? And then just what's your perspective on teaching our kids these things and hoping they don't have to live through? They're going to have some form of trauma, but really we don't want them to live through the depths of hardship that maybe we have.
Wow. I love your powerful questions. It's very beautiful and thoughtful. I'm going to say this, which could be triggering to people.
Yeah.
I wish trauma upon everybody.
Yeah.
I believe, this sounds terrible.
I hear you.
I believe we're here to experience trauma, not because life is cruel.
That's right.
But trauma cracks us open.
Yeah.
It strips away all the illusions and conditioning, the survival masks we wear. It invites us to sometimes painfully to remember who we are.
Yeah.
Right? So trauma is the doorway, not the destination. And for so long, I thought I had to outrun it, avoid it, or pretend it didn't happen, or it didn't shape me. But now I see that it's sacred. Trauma is so sacred.
What a beautiful sentiment. Yeah.
Our woman moon. Like our moon's like sacred. Oh, I'm starting my period. I'm like, no, it's beautiful. It's sacred. It's amazing. It's cleaning energy.
Yeah.
Because the fire of trauma, we get to make a choice to stay broken or to rise.
Yeah.
Not despite what happened, but because of it.
Yeah, that's so true. I feel like getting to hold space for your own children in the midst of their pain, to me, is just such a gift. That's where we can help them growing up and not trying to remove life's hardships, but letting them experience it and then holding space and being there to talk them through that and just help them learn that they're strong enough to get through it.
Yeah. And I believe that I wrote, to answer your question, I believe I did EQ Kid books to support people to transcend through their trauma, to reclaim their wholeness, to remember what our light is, and maybe just to guide others through the darkness with the wisdom that we've learned on our own, in a sense, because my whole slogan for EQ Kid books is difficult conversations made easy. With difficult conversations made easy, it's like I discuss things like, for instance, the My Body, My Rules book that I have and all the characters and stuff. So this My Body, My Rules book was obviously because of the assault from my sister to start.
Yeah.
Because my sister, she didn't know the rules for her body, even though we knew, like, don't touch, don't ask if we're touching me, no means no. And it just wasn't fully embodied inside of her. It wasn't the blueprint, right? And so we act upon and we move upon the blueprint of how we were made. Because we were abused, because we were hit and abused by our father, I grew up thinking that I'm supposed to be an abused child. I'm supposed to be hurt. This is how men treat women. So for the longest time, I manifested sexual assault. I manifested things happening to me over and over and over again because I was had the victim mindset. The victim mindset puts you down a spiral. It's like there's a difference between victimized, survivor, and thriver. Those are four different types of quadrants. And I think the issue is that we try moving from victim to thriver too fast and we bypass. And that's when we start overlaying the onions on top of the onions. Like, oh, wait, some nice over here. The devastation that's going to happen in your life.
Oh, my gosh. Like, I feel like your comment about moving to the quadrant to survivor too fast. When I tried to do that, the same patterns just hit. I also have sexual assault in my past and terrible relationships and not realizing that men were supposed to treat you good until my 30s. And I find that when I tried to make that leap too fast, what I was doing was not looking at my role in it. I really was the victim who blamed others, rightfully so. They certainly were bad players. However, by not taking the time to look at my own role in it, I didn't heal. And therefore, that manifestation of bad shit continued.
Yeah, for sure. Do you want to play a game with me?
Please, let's do it.
This is what I do with some of my clients.
Okay, so, great.
And this is kind of like the victim quadrant. It's like when you see a therapist, you're just straight victim.
Yeah,
right.
That's
you're
so
just
true.
Victim, victim, victim. And it's like, where's the healing? Where's the switch to victimize? Where is that quadrant? Like, how do you move into that? Because I said, don't skip. So
yes.
I want to make sure to support your viewers of like, what does that mean? Skipping.
Yeah.
So when you're talking to friends and you hear the same victim story over and over again, you're like, oh my God, this woman is telling me the same story over and over again and she's looping.
Yes.
So I would like to give your viewers a tool.
Please. I would love that.
So I would like you to tell me a story and convince me that you are a victim. I want you to tell me a story and convince me that, like, I want to be like, Jules, do you believe I'm a victim?
Yes.
I say yes or no.
Okay. I was a victim in a toxic work environment because my boss bullied me and didn't value me and never listened to me and kind of stepped in and tried to do my job for me. So in that situation, I was a victim. Do you agree with that?
I don't.
No. Okay.
I don't. And now I want you to tell me how that felt with me saying that you are not a victim.
I feel defensive. I feel like I know I was a victim in that situation. I was the one being wronged.
Yeah. So I'm saying that is, how do you think people feel when they try giving you, shutting you down, saying like not listening because you felt like I didn't listen to you. You felt like you weren't heard. Instead, now I'm going to say this. Oh my God. So you were at this position. You felt very taken advantage of. He tried to give you something and then you felt that he would just take it over. You felt dismissed. You felt like you were almost abused because you felt that you were taken advantage of in certain ways, that you weren't used, your gifts weren't being used and you weren't seeing. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yes, that's exactly it.
So now how do you feel with me repeating that?
I feel validated. I feel like you heard me. Without agreeing I was a victim, you still validated how I was feeling.
Exactly. So now I'm going to do that one. Now I'm going to say, Yes. Like, say you finish the story. It's like, yes, you are 100% a victim. Tell me the difference between those three different ones that I just did. Which one do you like more?
I like the middle one. I like you repeating back to me. That felt to me more like I was being seen.
Yeah. And so the thing is now that's what normally therapists do, right?
Yes.
Therapists listen to you. They hear you back and whatnot.
Yes.
But now what I would like you to do is I want you to convince me, retell that story, but convince me now that you are not a victim.
Not a victim. Jeez.
Taking 100% of responsibility.
Yes.
I want you now to say, Jules, do you believe now that I am not a victim?
Okay.
And you have full accountability and responsibility for everything you just said to me.
I felt like I was in a toxic environment because my opinions didn't seem to be valued. I felt unheard. I felt dismissed. However, I didn't speak up in those situations, didn't voice my feelings. I didn't take action to confide in other leaders to be able to help address those feelings. I just let those feelings happen to me. And so because I never was proactive in addressing what was happening to me, in my mind, that makes the case that I wasn't a victim in that situation because I wasn't owning my role in addressing it.
How does that feel to you?
It's weird. I thought I was going to feel bad about that, but it feels kind of powerful owning that I had a role that I just didn't step into, but I did have power that I could have claimed and I didn't. So it made me feel kind of strong saying that, to be honest.
Yeah, because you're taking accountability because he wasn't taking something from you. You were giving him
it.
Your power.
Yes, that's true.
Love doing with people.
Yes.
And I'm just stretching everyone who's listening to this. Just that's how you get to move through life. It's like, wow, how did I do this? Like, okay, well, I stayed in that job.
Yes.
I couldn't the way I needed to pay my bills. I felt like this.
Yeah.
But I ended up walking away anyways. And what happened?
Yes, yes, yes. And I did, just for the listener's sake, I did take my power back eventually and I did speak my truth, but it took me 2 years of spiraling, my health deteriorating. And it's so crazy, Jules, how we go through these cycles. Like, I feel like that exercise highlighted for me what I say to people in coaching relationships and that whole that you set the bar for how people are going to love you. When people are mistreating you, in many ways, you've set the bar that's allowing that. If you don't set a boundary of truly loving yourself, when you do, then people naturally treat you better. That was powerful how you can know that lesson deeply, but still have to relearn it in different areas of your life.
Yeah, and that's why forgiveness is so powerful. That's why people say forgiveness starts with yourself.
Yeah, that's so true. What a powerful exercise. I loved that. Thank you for walking me through that. That really felt good.
Yeah, I'm so glad you love that. And that's kind of what I do with my books.
Yes. Oh, I love that. I did want to ask you something about your book, and it tackles such difficult topics grounded in lived experience and within your family. And I'm curious for your own healing, like emotionally, what was it like to write that book, knowing that you personally survived and now you're really living in having to write those stories? What was that like for you?
Oh, I love this. I love your questions.
Thank you.
I'm not writing from open wounds. I'm writing from scars.
Yes. Yes. So
and I
powerful.
Don't have any emotional attachment to it anymore. My only emotional attachment is healing and giving other people the information to ground them, to have them
their bodies,
for them to have the new blueprint that I was gifted with when I was a child.
Yes.
And now I feel a responsibility to be able to support children in a way that I'm, my friends sometimes call me their little golden retriever. So I'm like,
oh my gosh, I relate to that too. Isn't that such a fun way? I mean, I feel like those of us that have had these hardships, I feel like as you heal them, there's just so much joy in us. I feel like our little girl is just so glad that we've hugged her and enabled her to experience joy, that we don't want to let that go.
Yeah. And it's also what I love about these books is I just started my body. I'm holding up a coloring book.
Yeah,
it's my body,
showing up.
My
most
coloring book.
Oh, I love
and
that.
And I'm designing. This is my first copy. My daughter already colored all into it. It's basically a activity book that goes with each book. I decided, I'm like, okay, well, how are we going to implement these books? So for instance, the boundaries. What's right? But what is boundaries? Boundaries can be what you put in your body for food. Boundaries can be how you touch me. Boundaries can be how you speak to me. Boundaries could be like how I share my toys, right? So my body, my rules, like this is my personal space. Mm-hmm. And I talk about bubbles, like what does a protection bubble feel like? And so seeing certain things like that. And my other books that I wrote, for instance, the Welcome to Harmony Hills. Yeah. This is the first book in the series because I wrote the third book first. And then after I wrote that one, I wrote another one called Manifest the Best Day Ever, which is the fourth book in the series.
Oh, I love that.
And then I wrote the second book in the series, Dracula Finds a Home. And then I'm like, why are these little bunny people? Why are they animals? I don't understand. And then I spoke to my mom. I'm like, Mom, like, what did we write about Harmony Hills? Like, what is Harmony Hills? How did I create this thing? And so my mom and I, we wrote Welcome to Harmony Hills together.
Oh, I love that you did that with your mom. That's great. So nice. And so
this one's about divorce. This one's meeting new friends, having a new, living in a new place. And it's a world that the child creates, right?
Yeah.
For escapism and to like, they can't solve our problems.
Yeah.
So where do they go? They go into a world called Harmony Hills.
That's so good. When I got divorced, my daughter was 4. And I so wish there was a resource like that. I feel like I didn't have a lot of the words to be able to. And for so long, it was her and I against the world. I, in many ways, talked to her like an adult because I didn't have the language or tools to bring it down to her level. And so that's just so cool. I love this resource. I am curious about your daughter. I love the times I've read what a teacher she was in resilience and forgiveness. And I'd love to just hear a little bit about her and some of the surprising lessons that she's reflected back at you.
Oh, wow. Well, my daughter's like a parrot. She reflects everything I reflect to her back to me.
So sweet. How old is she now? Sweet.
She is amazing. So we have a lot of breathing techniques. Whenever she would get dysregulated, there's this thing that we do. It's the 90-second rule. And for 90 seconds, if she's dysregulated, I ask her, I'm like, do you want to be held or do you want me to sit and just be?
Yep.
And she will tell me what she needs. Like, hold me. I'm like, okay, then I'll hold her and we'll count to 90 seconds. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes she tells me, don't count out loud. So I won't. I'll count in my head. And sometimes it takes 90 seconds to calm your nervous system because that is the reptile brain responding. Then after 90 seconds, it's your brain and it's your choice. So we have been trained for such a long time that it's not okay to shut off a reptile brain within 90 seconds because it might feel weird. Like, well, why do I feel better? Maybe I should keep crying because it doesn't feel right that I'm not crying still after 90 seconds. And so it's our choice after 90 seconds. So I'm trying to support my daughter in that method. And so when I have a breakdown, because I'm human, I have breakdowns.
Of course.
I write these books to keep myself in check.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. That makes so much sense. Yeah, of course.
And so when I have a breakdown, she says, Mom, breathe. Breathe with me. And she was like, Mom, do you want to scream in a pillow with me? I'm like, brilliant idea. And she will go run and get a pillow and we'll sit there and we'll scream together.
Oh, that's so good.
And she's also supportive of changing my energy into not put it out on something or someone, but on just letting it out into the universe and allowing the universe to hold and accept it and take it in, because the universe is powerful, right? It can hold so much. It holds all of us. So you just release it back to the universe, back to God, back to Gaia, whatever your belief system is.
Yeah.
And she does that for me. And we do that together, which is beautiful.
Oh, that's so good. So beautiful. You're reminding me of so many stories of my girl when she was little. She's now almost, she turned 17 tomorrow. So yeah, it's my little girl. And she, when she was little, she'd always say to me, Mom, you say universe, but it's God. And I would say, I know, but I call it universe. So that we would talk about that. And then I recently shared this story on another episode, but it's one of my favorite because she figured out the breathing on her own when she was like 5. I went into her bedroom and she was having a meltdown and she was breathing really heavy. And I said, Mara, what's going on? Are you okay? And she was like, yes, I'm frustrated. So I'm breathing in calm and I'm breathing out anger. And these kids are just so amazing. They're so wise.
They are. And we get to remember that we don't have the answers for them.
No, that's so true.
Yes. And again, back to the books, is the parents don't have any of the solutions or the answers. Parents only do reflective listening in the books.
Yes, yes, yes.
Mom, what do you think we should do? And it's all of them. Like, there's not even the teacher. The teacher always says, wow, that's a great idea. Would you like to teach the class?
Oh, that's so good. Sure. I love the way you're spreading this across the world. Don't you think, like, even thinking of our little ones, I think that your body as a child kind of regulate yourself. I think there's a deep knowing of how to take care of your nervous system that gets lost along the way, whether it's trauma or just trying to fit in. I think we lose that. So to be able to have resources like your books and going into the schools and reinforcing these things at such a young age, I think is going to be powerful in helping these little kids grow and maintain these things and reinforce what they know to be true.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm keep writing more and more and more. So far, I have 13 books written. I'm not going to release another book, until my rules really the word out. It's more for my own personal reasons it's not that I'm holding and hoarding these books.
Of course.
It's not, I don't want it to be buried. And I want people to be like, oh, my body, my rules. Like, this is the only book they can buy right now. Right. And I just want to talk about this one because, again, this is where all my trauma was stored. And so to answer, I'm now reflecting on this right now because of your question. It's like, how am I dealing with this trauma? How am I writing these books? Like, I'm writing them, but I'm being very selective of when I release it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, I feel like folks that haven't gone through this process, I mean, the marketing, the spreading of the word, not everything just goes instantly viral immediately and adopted. So I totally get, and I'm happy to help spread the word and get the first one out there so then your other ones also can get the attention that they deserve. I'm curious, just your own trauma journey. So just wanted to ask a few things about that. Being one of the first to speak publicly about Harvey Weinstein, what helped you find your voice then? I mean, to come forward in such a broad way, and what has healing looked like since your truth telling?
So I came out in 2017 before the Me Too movement. I told a friend about what happened in a trauma response way. Mm-hmm. He said he was going to do a movie with him, and I just reacted.
Yeah.
I was crying and I broke down. And that was 5 years before I came out publicly. And I was going to come out publicly 5 years before the Me Too movement happened.
Oh, yeah.
And I waited and I waited. And to the point, like, I wasn't pregnant with Sage yet, but I knew a lot of friends that have been also violated by Harvey. And then my friend, who was good friends with Allison Wiener, head of 2020, she said, Jules, that we all were in a three-way text. And he was like, it's Jules. And did you see New York Times article? And he's like, time. And so 2020 flew out to Austin, Texas when I moved here. Literally 2 months after I moved here, they flew out to Austin. And I was like, let's go. Let's do it. And I said my story. I was scared. It was the first time I ever said my story publicly, ever.
Wow.
And it was almost 10 years. I know it was like 5, 6, I don't even remember how many, but it was because when we pressed charges against him, it was 2 days before my statute of limitations was over.
Wow. That's incredible. Feels like divine timing.
It was crazy. But that was before. So that was, I don't remember the exact dates anymore. It's been such a long time. I believe that was maybe 2 years later or a year and a half later after I came out publicly. And, me coming out was more of supporting other women. It had really nothing to do with myself personally, because I'm holding up my hands in quotes right now. There's just sexual assault. Right?
Yeah.
If any charges were just sexual assault, it would only be 2 years, 3 years. So me coming out had nothing to do with me. It had to do about every single other person that would get support with my story to be another person coming out.
Yes.
And people, because I was another person, like a nobody, and I wasn't an actress. I was a massage therapist.
Yeah.
So it was like, I wanted to make sure that people knew it wasn't just celebrities it was happening to. It was other people that didn't want to just be an actress. It was other people who was just doing their job.
Worse.
And so that's kind of why I came out publicly, and the reason why I came out and decided to go all the way through to the Los Angeles trial was, why not?
Yeah.
You know, I had a baby, I had my little girl, and I said, who am I to tell her to come speak out about someone that possibly in the future might hurt her if her own mother wouldn't do it?
Yeah.
So I did it not just for me at that point, for my daughter, for other women who couldn't speak up in fear of their significant others knowing what happened to them. A lot of people still aren't speaking publicly about what happened to them with a lot of incidences because they're ashamed.
Yeah. I mean, somebody who has experienced sexual assault, sexual abuse, the Me Too movement, even for those of us that weren't directly tied to Harvey, it was just so powerful to collectively have so many women coming out. On one hand, heartbreaking to see that it's just so prevalent. I know very few women that haven't had something in the realm of sexual assault happen to them. But to be able to inspire voices and more voices and see that growing, I feel like I'm just curious of being kind of so close to the core of that and having all of those women with such similar experiences to you, what did that collective sisterhood feel like living through that?
I've never been asked that question before.
Yeah.
I hit in a way where I didn't take any other interviews. I was called by every single news outlet you can possibly imagine trying to get another interview for me. And I said what I had to say already.
Yep.
And I didn't speak about it again. I said what I had to say already. So I was more of a hidden person where I didn't even watch the news. I didn't want to get any updates because I knew I was going to get a call from a radio station asking, like, hey, what's going on? Did you hear about this? And I'm like, I'm not doing any interviews. And so how it felt, it wasn't how everyone would probably imagine, which I would feel that it might be feel like sisterhood and whatnot.
Yeah.
It felt very isolating.
Interesting.
It felt very, very isolating for me. I felt embarrassed. Mm-hmm. I felt a lot of shame because a lot of the women, they said, well, why? Like a lot of women, they kept going back to him. They kept working with him.
Oh,
they don't understand abuse.
Right.
So I was slut shamed. Mm-hmm. I was put down. And also it was really confusing because being somebody that was abused by my father and sexual assaults by my neighbor, it was normal for me to go hang out with the people that would rape me or sexual assault me or abuse me. It was completely normal. Like, I mean, like, well, why did you go back? I'm like, well,
right?
I've always gone back.
Yeah.
I didn't know I wasn't supposed to go back.
Oh my gosh. So true. I would go back, and ones that many would consider minor times when people have grabbed my butt or grabbed my boob, I just freeze. Even after knowing all of these things, my body's response from being young and in these situations is I just freeze and I don't react in the moment. So there's so much shame there. It's just so interesting looking at all of you and feeling like, gosh, that must feel so freeing. Those of us that have never spoken out, it felt like something to look up to. And I'm just still so proud, even though for you that brought some shame and it wasn't all the things that I envisioned it to be. It's crazy for all of us, no matter how we handle it, no matter how much we heal, I feel like there's still going to be some level of shame or questioning that we didn't handle it as we should have in some way.
Yes. And there was a lot of different steps. Like my story was distorted. Like, I mean, I didn't remember everything. I hid it for so many years, for over 10 years. And people were asking me questions. I'm like, I don't remember, but I do remember what happened. But I don't remember all the, like, it was so confusing and discombobulating. Like, I couldn't grasp what was happening because it was happening so fast.
Yeah.
And there was an overcorrection.
Yeah, I can see that.
That's also where I'm like, how did you feel after? There was an overcorrection of the Me Too movement where people were being called out for things that they didn't do. And people were saying, Me Too, Me Too, Me Too. And that's also where the shame came in. It's like, what did we do?
Yes, that's true. Really, I really struggled with the overcorrection going so far in the past, before this was a movement and before we called such attention to it, which to me, that's such a blessing that we did for going forward and gave us language. I'm proud of men that have really learned into this and recognized the things that are unacceptable. But I think sometimes we went back too far. And I think we do this a lot now with different types of movements where we go back in the past and we shame people for things that back then were normalized. And certainly not the extreme. I'm not talking about sexual assault or rape, but I think just things that got lumped into this of inappropriate behavior. And I think we need to go forward, not shame people for the past.
Yes, and I've heard from a lot of men, because I hear from a lot of men, actually, find out that I was one of the people that came out before the Me Too movement. They're like, well, can I compliment a woman's hair?
Right. Yes, exactly.
You can compliment my hair. Exactly. Just don't
touch
my hair.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Yes, we want to be complimented. We want you to open up our door. We want to feel beautiful and loved and adored. But don't tell me I have a nice ass.
Yeah.
It's like,
good call.
Yes.
Right. Yes.
No.
It's like, I feel like we're not saying the extremes. Common sense.
Common sense.
I love the look on your face. Yeah. Common sense across the board is not the same for everybody, but you know.
Yeah. If you're being raised by somebody who smokes and drinks and cusses and is so racist, what's common sense for them?
That's true. So true. That's a good point. I was thinking it as I was saying it, but it's just, gosh, come on.
Yeah. And what's interesting is people will only be better if you start with yourself.
That's so true. I mean, that's really the message. I just saw a video this morning that talked about how fear and abuse in the world right now is just so loud. And so we think that the healing and the love isn't making a difference, but it's the quiet strength. Each of us do that. And it is the bigger percentage. We just need to keep doing more of it for ourselves. I read your story. One of the things that stood out to me, and my heart hurt for you, and also I just was so excited to hear about your resilience, was just how soon after dust kind of settling with Harvey that your divorce and financial loss came to the light. And I'm just curious at that point, like how, like to me, when I've had those back to back, those are the times when I almost break. You know, those are the times when pride myself on resilience, but the back-to-back is so hard in my opinion. With that, like, how did you keep going, especially when you're already rebuilding in so many ways?
My daughter.
Right.
Yeah. My daughter.
Yeah, so true.
My nose is thinking of it.
It's giving me goosebumps thinking of it. Like, it's because I relate to that.
I'm like, I don't want to move. I don't want to sell my house. There was no equity in my house. Like I literally just bought the house less than a year from after we got divorced. I want stability for her. Like my mom, she worked her butt off to give me stability. And my dad was the alcoholic. My dad drank away the money and he was the liability. And my mom basically wore the pants.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking like, I want the same for my daughter. I'm going to work my ass off and I'm not going to let her know about it. So it's like whenever I had my time with her, I'm with her. Yeah. And between that time, I am doing everything I possibly can to keep afloat. And how did I survive it? It's just my daughter after the trial. Then during the trial, we were like, let's get divorced. And then it was like a 6 month period for when he bankrupted the company without telling me. Shut off the work email, and then everything came going down. I lost it for about 2 weeks.
Yep.
It was like a 2 week period where I couldn't really eat. I couldn't eat and I was shaking. My mom flew out from Colorado and my mom even thinks of me as the most resilient person she knows. And then when she saw me and my reactions with calling her, she's like, I'm coming out.
A good mom.
She flew out immediately and was just there to support. Like when I got Sage back, she was there supporting me, making sure Noni was there. So it's like just having fun.
Yeah.
I just woke up after one day, like at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, I'm going to be a children's book author.
Oh, that's incredible.
like all the businesses I never thought in a million years I would be like, my whole purpose is to be a children's book author.
Yes. Incredible. But isn't that amazing? You just held that space, felt what you needed to feel, and then got to the point where you had that clarity moment. That is incredible. That in those moments, it wasn't just like your words, it wasn't just about surviving. You still get back to your purpose, even in the midst of hurt.
I allowed myself to feel.
Yeah, so
I gave myself the spaciousness I needed to feel. And there's a lot of people that don't. And that's what I mean by the bypassing, again, what we normally talk about earlier, is, no, I'm okay, I'm okay. You're not okay, and it's okay not to be okay.
That's so true. Gosh, there's so many things I want to say that we have that you just spark resonance. One of them that we have in common is the belief that storytelling is a big part of healing. And obviously, a big part of your business. Why do you think stories are such powerful tools for emotional intelligence?
It helps you relive and rewrite. We live an experience and then it turns into a story. And it's about how you direct and perceive that story and how you want to alter that story in order, kind of like what we just did, that practice that we did.
Yep.
Be a story of a victim. Tell me you as not a victim. You change the story. So that's why stories are so powerful. So if something happened for you in the past that you didn't like, the beauty of storytelling is you can make it to whatever story you want it to. So you can change your past. You can change your history because the reaction that you had then is not the reaction you have now. So you can take and go back at any story you ever had that was a negative story and change it into a positive one and reprogram your nervous system. That's the beauty of storytelling.
So true. I love that. Continuing, so storyteller, I'll put that in there. You've worn so many hats. Storyteller, entrepreneur, inventor, survivor, author, coach, mom. Which role has been the most surprising teacher for you?
Mom, being a mom.
Yes, mom. Everything comes back to being mom. Like it is. It's isn't being a mom? It's just, we may have had childhoods where we had to be resilient and learn and overcome. But when you're a mom, it times that by a million. It's teacher, it's strengthener, it's more compassion, more love for the world. Like, it adds so much.
Yeah, and for me, it's just, I can cry right now thinking about it. Every time I get to hand off my daughter to my ex, and then I don't get to see her for like a week or 10 days. Yeah. I just handed her off yesterday, and it's a heartbreak. It's like, he has a 10-day option and he's doing that. And it's like, oh, I haven't gone longer than 10 days without seeing it. It's long.
So hard. I feel like the hardest for me were bedtimes. Like something about bedtime and going to sleep and not having their little faces to go snuggle with. And it's just that part of it is, I think, the hardest.
Yeah, and it's so good. It feels so good just holding them and seeing how they grow up. And when they say, Mommy, I love you, it just fills your heart. It makes everything worth it.
Yes, yeah. It's so neat. I love my daughter now going to be 17. And I love how much it's been so neat. I, part of me also in the handoff worried so much about the part of her life that I missed. And it's really just as somebody that's now been in this for all over 12 years, I will say it's just so rewarding eventually when they can get old enough to start filling you in more about that life. And it's just so neat to hear about their experiences in the world and what your love and consistency meant to them. But then also how they show up in the world without us is just really, it makes me so proud and rewarded just to hear who these little people grow into, even when we're not sitting right in the same room.
Yeah, because we turn from being selfish to caring for someone else.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the evolving of when we're a child, we're selfish. We
right.
us, me. And then you get a relationship with someone, you're like, oh, it's we or your family and whatnot. And then you move back into only them. And that's where people also get the timelines crossed. It's like moms forget who they are. They just think of themselves as a mom, not them as an individual.
Anymore.
Yeah. And so what do you do yourself to fill up yourself? And so that's why I take these 10 days now that I don't have my daughter. And I'm like, okay, how do I fill myself up so I'm even more filled when I see her next time?
That's so important. I'm so glad you said that. And I'm glad for listeners right now that are maybe early in that co-parenting process or have been in it a while and are feeling that loss when the kids are away. People used to ask me early on, I was the one that decided to end my marriage. And people would say, like, how do you do that? You're going to miss your daughter when she's away. And I would say, I would rather miss her when she's away and be full when she's with me than have her all the time and she only gets kind of a broken version of me. Yeah. And it's, I very much believe that.
I have a friend who said, Jules, don't worry. When you get divorced, this is the best hidden secret ever.
Yeah.
I mean, they actually are going to do things.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
He's going to actually step up. He's going to have to change a diaper. He's going to
That's
have to.
That's true. Yeah.
He's going to have to clean up after her.
Yeah.
And you're going to get a break.
That's right.
And I'm like, I don't know if this sounds good. I can breathe. I can sleep in. I can do this and I can finally do laundry and not have to get distracted. And it changes into a positive later, but it's always the transition time. The first couple
that's
so hard.
It's true. Those first few days. And then to me, when the first few days, they're back. So it's kind of because it's like there's just this, and I don't relate to that. Like I did have not the healthiest home growing up, but my parents were together. So I didn't have that shifting from house to house and stuff. But I feel like those emotions, when the kids come back, that would be hard. It's a different environment, different roles, different feel, all of that. And I think just another reason your books are so important, because that period of time, you feel like we all, as co-parents, need language to help our kids with that, because many of us don't relate to that.
Yeah.
Well, so just a few more questions for the parents listening, especially those that are really struggling right now. What would you say to somebody who wants to raise emotionally intelligent kids, but don't really feel emotionally equipped themselves?
Well, it starts with you. It starts with changing your stories. I really recommend just going deep within your stories and making a list of where in my life do I feel like I'm a victim? Start there. Where do I feel like this? And start story changing. Tell your story differently, just like what we did.
Yep.
And it starts with that. Taking a, like, for instance, accountability and responsibility. Well, I was raped. How, when my sister was molested when I was a child, how can she take responsibility and accountability for that? Well, what I would do and the advice I would give is, I was a child. I was molested or sexually assaulted by my neighbor. I was innocent. I didn't understand. I didn't know what was happening. I felt like he was like a brother. I trusted him. I felt safe. And that does not make anything that happened okay. But what is okay is, because that happened for me, I am a more resilient, loving, abundant, understanding person. And a boy that was 16 that would do that to me. Wow, can you imagine what he went through? He was a foster care child. Maybe that's how he was shown love. Maybe that's how he was touched. Maybe that's why he is a foster care child. Maybe that's why he thought that's how he can show love to me, is because that's the only way he was showed love to by his family that's never wanted him anymore. And you put yourself into the other person's shoes of what, of a more of a empathy state and feeling for them, feeling for, wow, what could have they possibly been through to make them feel like this was okay?
Yeah.
And seeing them as a victim and not just yourself. And that's where some of the most difficult healing and the most transformational healing has happened in my life is, wow, they really didn't understand. It's like, what was their story? And feeling that kind of empathy is mind altering and it's difficult, but it's possible. And if you really, truly focus on that story of theirs, of why they did that, true healing can really start.
That is huge. I feel like for me, that was one of my most pivotal moments on the healing journey, where I've been able to get to the point where I say, there's no villains or monsters in my story. That there are people that were hurting that never intended to hurt me. I truly believe that. I think that their hurt cause them to hurt other people. And I send everybody on that list love and healing, just like I do anybody else in my life. Because, and people have said to me, like, especially my mom's visiting tomorrow, and I would say she's one of the people that protective of me and gets so angry at me sometimes, like, be mad. And it's like, I've been mad, but it's a process. And I'm not doing it for them. I'm doing it for me. It's really powerful to just recognize that there's imperfect humans. We're all one of them. And I'd rather send them love, and it heals me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a few questions. We call this section rapid reel. Just whatever comes to mind, a couple of lighter questions. What's your go-to comfort meal when life is unraveling?
Oh, wow. My go-to comfort meal is anything that I previously ate the following day. Creature of habit. I've been told that Jules, how can you eat the same meal over and over and over again?
Yeah.
Like right now, it's Indian food.
Yeah.
Paneer makati. And I'm like, I'll just go right there and start eating. Or soup. Or it's like literally anything that I have that's available, because my comfort food is me not having to think.
Oh, that's a good one. Oh, that's great.
So my comfort is doing less.
What is something kind of useful for your soul that you've learned from running all these businesses?
One thing at a time, and just focus, get clear, be purposeful. And if it's not purposeful, try to get rid of it.
Something that you've believed for way too long that turned out to be totally untrue.
I always thought I was ugly.
Wow.
I mean, I was told I was ugly by my dad. I was made fun of. I was picked on. And I had the worst confidence. I mean, I literally looked in the mirror and was like, why are you so ugly?
Wow.
And I'm beautiful.
You are beautiful. You're a beautiful soul. Your beauty shines through.
Thank you. And that's kind of like what I learned. I'm like, wow, I am beautiful.
Yes.
And it's not about appearance.
Of course. No, it's a light.
Yeah. And it just like, wow, I'm a beautiful person.
Yes. Imagine if we could see ourselves how most of the world sees us. Like, yes, you shine bright, friend.
Thank you.
Healing is
fun.
Fun. That's so true. I love that. Yes.
Playful.
It's like playful fun. It's like contagious.
The
more you heal, people want to know what you're doing.
Healing is fun.
It is.
If you think of healing is fun, you can dive in deeper.
Yes.
Do more
of the work. Yes. So true. Okay. Final one of these. Speaking of fun, what is a fun activity that you and Sage love to do together?
Paddleboarding, playing house. We love drawing, painting.
Oh,
we
love
singing and dancing and putting plays on and forts. I mean, I can go on forever.
Oh, what a fun house.
E-bike rides. She jumps on the back of the e-bikes and my Zugo bike.
Oh, how cool.
And we have our dog chase us, and it's amazing.
I love that. Well, since you mentioned your dog, give your dog a shout out. What's your dog's name?
Willow, you're the best dog ever.
No. Hi, Willow. All right. Before we get to the final question, just let us know, our listeners, how can they follow you, connect with you, buy your book? Give us some of the details. And I'll also include these on the link for the episode.
You can find me on social media, on Instagram at EQKidBooks. Or my personal is Jules Bindi. That's JulesBindi. And that's Jules with no E. Just follow me on social media, EQ Kid Books, EQKidBooks.com. Buy the books. And by the way, the EQ Kid Books is a nonprofit organization. So anyone that buys a book, it's a tax write-off. So you get emailed a tax write-off number. And also we donate a book for every book that's purchased to a school or a child in need or foster care program.
Very cool. I love that. All right. Final question. Some listeners might find themselves right now at their own messy middle, rock bottom. When you found yourself there, what's a piece of advice that you wished would have come sooner?
Allow yourself to be in the mess.
So good. Yes.
But when you find yourself drowning in the mess, climb yourself out one block at a time. Don't just push the mess to the side. Look at what mess is created and name it. And say, this is my anger mess. Where is this coming from? And chew off one bite at a time, right? You don't swallow the whole cow. You chew one bite at a time. This is coming from a vegetarian, but just take small bites and work from there.
Joel, it was such a pleasure meeting you. I loved our conversation. Thank you for being here. And messies, until next time, keep breathing through the breakdowns, laughing through the lessons, and showing up exactly as you are. Because becoming, it might be messy, but it is so worth it. Thanks, Joels.
Thanks.
Before we wrap today, I want to invite you to be part of the Becoming is Messy community. Subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss a single episode. And if there's anything that resonates with you, please leave a review. Your feedback means the world to me, and it helps other people find this community. Follow me on social media. I'd love to hear your ideas for future topics, your questions, and stories from your own messy moments. And if you're feeling inspired, check out the Becoming is Messy shop, where you can grab a mug, a t-shirt, or something else that reminds you to embrace your messy magic every single day. A huge thank you to the incredible Wolves and Sheep for providing the music for Becoming is Messy. Check them out on your favorite music streaming platform. As we close out today's episode, remember this. Messy is just another word for growing. So keep showing up, keep laughing, and keep making beautifully awkward progress. Until next time, stay messy, my friends.